from across the Volunteer State, the countdown to kickoff with your exclusive scouting report. Welcome to the Coach's Meeting. Coach to Coach.
Which team could correct the most mistakes from the previous weeks? Our coaches said that likely would win the third Saturday in October. Well, Alabama couldn't run it. They couldn't stop Tennessee's run game. They could not avoid poise penalties in the Neyland Stadium environment. Their lessons not corrected. The Vols win.
The Vols met the challenge and the magnitude of the moment better than Alabama. That's just fact. You have to do that. Now, they were not perfect, but they were enough to win a major, major game.
Tennessee's defense is keeping things close in these games. How important in this bye week to finding some concrete answers on the offense? Because, Dave, you simply can't keep putting the pressure on the defense through an entire season.
Well, the offense starts with the quarterback. And the quarterback, you must continue to work on his accuracy. That's the biggest issue right now. That only comes through practice and then letting it go in the big moments. He was better versus Alabama in the second half, but he needs more. Now, the offensive tackle issues are what they are, but you can help. You can help those offensive tackles in two ways. First of all, you can help by putting an extra person over there to that side or by turning the line. They understand all of that thing. They know how to do that. But by moving the chains on first and second down, you help your offensive line immensely. But it still goes back to the offensive issues on this football team. The accuracy of the quarterback early in ball games is a big, big factor.
But let me tell you what the defensive coordinator is doing right now, and that defensive staff. They're saying they're embracing the fact that we are winning games. Yes, it's a team, but you're also a side of the ball. Guys, let's go win football games. In a tight ball game, let's make a play. We can score on defense. That's the approach you have defensively. You let the offensive staff handle what they need to be doing over there.
There's only so many tunnel screens that the defenses are going to let you run, and you need to be able to hit these throws over the middle and down the field to back defensive coordinators. To back the defensive coordinators off of the calls that are giving you issues. But that's the issue right now.
Tennessee offensively is averaging 21.5 points per game in Southeastern Conference games, those four Southeastern Conference games. They're only scoring 4 points a game in the first half. So the first two quarters, they're not even scoring a touchdown. Why? Biggest problem offensively, and it all occurs in the first half, a lot of it in the first quarter, they're stopping drives by either penalties, sacks, or turnovers. In other words, they're stopping themselves. If they can just get some offense going that first half, it's going to put them in great shape because they play extremely well in the second half.
Vols with a bye week to work on those issues and other lessons. Our coaches will explore some of those in less than 10 minutes as we move toward the final Saturday of October. Boy, Georgia's defense causing havoc last Saturday in Austin. Dave, that was ferocious.
Yeah, and look, Larry, Georgia is now getting healthy, especially on the defensive front. The things that they did structure-wise against Texas, when you watch that tape, they started using pre-snap line shifts. They used pressure rush defenses from linebackers, safeties, and slot defenders. That was extreme. And when I say pressure rush, I'm meaning that they had delayed blitzes that they were using from all of those situations, because if the person that they were covering or if the person they were responsible for on contain was staying in the block, they rushed. So they brought different people, linebackers, safeties, and slot defenders. By the end of the first half, Georgia had forced 3 turnovers, 5 punts, and 5 sacks. They had it rolling. They had a 23-0 lead. That's exclusively due to their pass rush.
This wasn't unexpected to me. Defensively, the staple of this team, this is a Kirby Smart coach team, a Nick Saban disciple. This is a defensive coach. Wasn't surprising to me. Now, did I really think they were going to? Did not know. Texas is good, too. All that showed up Saturday night.
You know, both of you said a year ago, maybe even 2 years ago, that you thought Texas was more prepared for the SEC battles than Oklahoma. A lot of that had to do with line play. But with no disrespect meant to South Carolina, I think most people probably would have heard that statement and thought, okay, Oklahoma is going to struggle with Tennessee. They're going to struggle with LSU. They're going to struggle with Alabama. But struggling to South Carolina?
Well, a couple of things on that. This past summer, I was in Norman visiting with one of my former coaches, and had the opportunity to have dinner with Coach Barry Switzer. And we got to talking to him about Texas and Oklahoma coming into the league. And he said he thought Texas was very prepared. He said, I don't think we're prepared here at Oklahoma yet, primarily from overall depth and skill players. And after watching Oklahoma a lot these first six ball games, skill players are not where power teams, football teams have to be there, especially at the quarterback position. They had a redshirt quarterback who they really – he was a top number one quarterback recruit in the country. They had another freshman quarterback. Neither one of those guys – they're both playing like what they are, young, and they're making a lot of mistakes. Defense is above average, but offense significantly below average, and that's what's giving them problems now in this league. And all this kind of came to a head. Coach Venables fired his offensive coordinator after the first six games.
Well, Coach Matthews, I agree with you, and I agree with Coach Switzer. They're not strong enough up front. And really, if you want to be honest, they're not strong enough up front on both sides of the football. But the quarterback issues, just like for any other team, you start having quarterback issues and you have problems up front, those are two things that are deadly, deadly, especially in a conference like this.
Nico has had problems early. The reason that coaches and head coaches do not change quarterbacks is exactly what happened at Oklahoma, and it's happened at Auburn this year also. When you make a change in your quarterback after who started the season for you, you better be right, because if you put another quarterback in and then have to take him out and put the first quarterback back in, your offensive team knows what's going on there. That's why head football coaches are very, very leery about replacing, regardless of how bad they're playing, replacing starting quarterbacks. There's a reason why they started this season with somebody number one, and you really have to play poorly to get yourself out of that starting position. And I think that's what's happened to Oklahoma, quite frankly.
This is Coach to Coach with former University of Tennessee defensive coordinator Doug Matthews and former NFL defensive coordinator and head coach Dave McGinnis, driven by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office. In Tennessee, fans don't let fans drive drunk.
You know, starting to save for your future doesn't have to be difficult. Let Wilson Bank and Trust help tone up your financial goals this year. Our certificates of deposits or CDs can help your money work harder with our competitive rates, earning you more than ever before. WBT checking options allow you to earn rewards you can really use, like a high interest rate or cash back on check card purchases when you meet some e-banking qualifications. Visit your closest Wilson Bank and Trust office or online at wilsonbank.com to get started today. Member FDIC.
All has reason. Soon I will satisfy my thirst for a win. And there is only one way to do it. By playing the new October instant games from the Tennessee Lottery. Fly by your nearest Tennessee Lottery retailer for some instant fun. I'll meet you there. You can count on it.
With October instant games, you could sink your teeth into top prizes of up to $500,000. Only from the Tennessee Lottery. Game-changing fun. Please play responsibly.
When it's time for the big game, big fans need big TVs. And at Double Dogs, you can even satisfy big appetites. With choices like Black Angus Burgers, wings tossed in homemade sauces, and dog bowl nachos, well, Double Dogs will make sure you get the fuel you need for lunch, dinner, or even a post-game snack. So whether you have two legs or four, you can cheer on and chow down at Double Dogs. Visit DoubleDogs.biz to view the menu and order online. Double Dogs, sit, stay, eat.
When the arena lights dim for a concert, or when the crowd becomes one at a big game, you can almost feel like you're the biggest fan. But who's your biggest fan? It's the person that will get you home safely after a night of drinking. It's the person who looks out for your life to make sure you leave the stadium with someone sober. This could be a designated driver or someone who offers to get you a rideshare. Because in Tennessee, fans don't let fans drive drunk. Brought to you by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office, a division of the Tennessee Department of Safety and Homeland Security.
The Alabama Lessons. We call it Coach to Coach with Doug Matthews, Dave McGinnis. I'm Larry Stone. Number one key to the game. Tennessee could not let Jalen Milroe beat you with the runs. Mission accomplished.
Yeah, Larry, let me tell you how they accomplished that, too. The defensive front was dominant, but they were disciplined. The excellent plaster coverage in the back end. We talked about this going into the ball game, off-schedule plays. You got to be able to plaster your coverage downfield, wherever the man comes into your area, whether it's man-to-man, it's easy. If it's zoned, you got to pick them up. They did a great job of that. And whenever the play went off script, they went immediately to that. They did a great job of, and plus, timely pressure when Alabama got behind the chains. And the pressure was constant. It was constant throughout the ball game. It unsettled Milroe, and it ended up winning the ball game.
I text Monday after this game Coach Tim Banks and said this to him. In the last 25 years, this was the best offensive defensive game plan, and more importantly, an executed game plan by the players that I've seen against a quality opponent. You cannot let Milroe beat you. Tennessee didn't. They contained him all day long. 12 quarterback hurries, 3 sacks, pressure all day. Make him do something that he doesn't particularly like to do. That's throwing the ball deep and outside. He completed one of those all day long. It was a really masterful game plan, great game plan, and it was even better executed by this defensive team.
And part of that, I thought Pierce had his most productive game up front. He was active to the quarterback coach. He set the edge versus the run, which is, I mean, I thought he did a nice job of that. And then he was also relentless. When you start breaking this tape down, he was relentless in chase from the backside because the front side was, I mean, this was a very complimentary defense that they played. And then he was very stout when they started running at him, and he was deadly when they started running away from him.
Well, we talk so much and we hear so much about sacks. Why come you're not getting sacks? Well, quite frankly, a good offense is going to protect the guy that's going to get sacked. James Pierce Jr. has been the best defensive lineman that Tennessee has. He is extremely disruptive. You don't see some of the things that he does. He's extremely disruptive in both the pass and the run. From that open inside, he puts so much pressure on an offense. He is having an outstanding year. He's just not getting the sacks that a lot of people kind of expect. But as far as playing, extremely productive.
McCoy was a ball hawk in this game. Dave, walk us through that first interception.
Now, excellent job of eye discipline on the quarterback and pattern recognition. He played front to back and broke perfectly off the short route to the when he was underneath the deep route behind him to the pylon. And his directional delivery key, his eye discipline, and his break on the directional delivery key, and then the one-handed catch, I mean, that was as good a play as you can make in the low red zone on an interception that went high to low. It incorporated everything you talk about as a defensive secondary coach. Eye discipline, break, patience, and then complete the catch.
A transfer portal player that came in, he is exactly what Tim Banks needed to be able to run his defense. He is an excellent, and I say that with cap letters, press man corner. He's going to be put on the best receiver that the opponent has. Mac mentioned that interception in the end zone. What was great about that was press man forcing him outside, but he got his eye, because he knew there wasn't any depth to throw the football, he got his eyes back on the quarterback and saw where he was going to throw it and went up and got it. And again, that just comes extreme awareness. He has to be a really, really smart football player, probably a smart young man. He knows down and distance situations. And, you know, the other thing that you kind of get lost in all that, he is an excellent tackler, not only a space tackler, but he'll come pop you, too. So he is a physical corner. I'd be hard-pressed to name one ever that's been a better cover corner at Tennessee. And Tennessee's had some really good ones than the way he's playing right now. I'll tell you what, one thing he's done, he's put himself in probably a top one or two draft position. He's only a junior, but he's having a great year.
Yeah, we've talked for a couple of seasons here about forcing turnovers, and I'll tell you what's happening. The defensive front pressure now is beginning to wear good offensive lines down. Now, you've got corners now that can play man-to-man. That is a huge part of it. But they're unsettling the quarterbacks with what's going on up front. And here's the other thing. The turnovers not only come from being able to individual plays, but they're getting excellent, as we call it on defense, coach, swarm to the ball. They're getting a lot of people around the football. All of that is adding up.
Tennessee's doesn't have a whole lot of takeaways. The four ball games, they only have seven on that. I think three of those are interception, maybe four. But they're getting around the football a lot, and they're getting the ball on the ground. And the turnovers that they've received are timely turnovers. A couple of them inside the 10-yard line going in. Those are like getting three turnovers because you're going to give up points there. When you get a turnover inside that 10-yard line, 20-yard line for that matter, you know, that keeps your opponent from even getting 3 points. So sometimes it's where those turnovers occur. But Tennessee's certainly better in that area. I think they're going to continue to get better because the area where they're really looking better and better in the secondary is in the secondary. And with the whatever team knows coming in to play Tennessee here on out, they're going to throw the football to win. So the more passes you throw, the more opportunities. Alabama called 50 passes, drop-back passes, 50. Now, they only threw 46 of them. But, you know, and that's what Tennessee's going to see. And that's a great feeling when you're a defensive coordinator knowing you can make the other team throw the football. Those are huge pluses.
Well, it's not only at the corner position. We're talking about the back end. Brooks at safety. First of all, Brooks made a TD-saving tackle early in that ball game on Milroe. Milroe had broken out to the defensive right side. And if Brooks doesn't come up and make that tackle, he's gone. Because Milroe probably was the fastest player on the field when you look at it. Great tackle there. But he's a very active tackler. But the interception was just the clincher. This guy played a really, really good, solid football game as a safety.
Everything in that interception that Max is talking about is what secondary coaches teach all the time. Eye discipline. He knew where the receiver was. Eyes on that quarterback, made a great drive on the football, and come up with a huge play. Now, Tennessee likely would have won anyway, but, boy, to end a game like that, again, going back to building your defense, guys, this is how we win ball games. We win ball games by making plays on defense.
Talking about Alabama throwing the football, the Tide targeted Ryan Williams 19 times in that game Saturday. But none of them were backbreakers.
They kept it in front of the defense, and they allowed no explosives. You knew he was going to get his touches, but you also had a plan coverage-wise and pressure-wise to keep him from wrecking your defense. Because prior to this, studying the tape, he had wrecked some other defenses. You had a nice plan, and you executed it. And they had plenty of chances. You said 19 times, Larry. That's a lot of targets in one ball game. But Tennessee rose up to that occasion.
19 out of 45 passes, and his longest catch, and what has been what Ryan Williams has been become a household name in Alabama, long catches. Longest catch was 16 yards. No splash plays on that. And let me tell you what Tennessee's game plan was going in. You go back and look at that, and some of these things you kind of missed. The first time he caught the ball, it was about a 6-yard slant route, and it was McCoy on him. He came in and physically knocked his rear end to the ground. That was the game plan. Young guy playing in front of a huge crowd. We're going to get after his fanny. And from that point on, you know, he really didn't do too much. One catch for 16 yards, dominated by Tennessee's cornerbacks.
All right, Vols with a couple of turnovers in the first half offensively, and yet Alabama not able to take advantage. So excellent sudden change defense?
No doubt, and that's why you work on that all the time. It's the winning edge, quite frankly. Tennessee, three turnovers in the first half, a fumble and two interceptions. All three times, Tennessee came in and forced a punt. Not only stopped them, but forced a punt. You can't do any better than that. Talk about giving yourself a confidence and momentum in a ball game, and talking about getting the crowd involved. When you do that, it just helps everybody.
Now, Doug, you and I have both been defensive coordinators, and I know you did it. I did it too. You work on sudden change mentality. You have a special thing that you do. I used to bring the guys up if there was a sudden change, because I was on the sideline, and say, now, here's our sudden change mentality. And sudden change doesn't only come after a turnover. It can be a flip of field position. It can be a failed fourth down. A lot of times when you're put into the game defensively with your back against the wall, you've got to flip to that sudden change mentality. They perform that perfectly.
We had a term for it. I don't know if you all do, but defensively, we called it, whenever the ball was fumbled, a sudden change, we called it Pearl Harbor. And now,
I didn't
going back
that.
To World War II days, something, it was a sneak attack. We got to get back out there. So that when players heard that, they immediately, that first unit, and it was always the first unit went back in, by the way, after a turnover, after a sudden change turnover. It was always that first unit. They knew when they heard Pearl Harbor, they were getting that helmet on and out on that football field.
Always love to ask you guys about situations, because you educate us on how coaches think. But the Alabama decision, 4th and 22, 3 timeouts. Would you have considered punting there?
I would have. Yes, I would have. I would have considered punting it. But let's just think about this for a minute. The Alabama defense was not playing great at that time either. So I understand. There's no guarantee if you're Alabama that you would have that you would have been able to get it back. Because, you know, the second half, the offense of Tennessee started to generate a little bit. But the initial answer to your question, Larry, yes, I would have considered punting it.
I listened to Coach DeBoer's Monday press conference that every coach had, and he was asked that question. This is after the ball game. He was asked that question, and I thought he had a very good answer. And you could tell he looked through this. He said, hey, we had 3 timeouts left. We were going to have to use those timeouts to get the ball back either way, whether we punted it or not. If they get a 1st and 10, then the game's over. So that was what went through his mind. 4th and 22, long way to get to. I don't think that the pass that they ended up throwing was probably what they wanted, but some of that had to do with Tennessee's pass rush. But on 4th and 22, if you're laid back there on the defense, you want him to throw a 10-yard pass and come up and get him on the – you know, he can pick up 21, and you're going to get the ball back.
Tablet, clicker, game film. You're in the coach's meeting. Coach to coach, driven by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office.
When the arena lights dim for a concert, or when the crowd becomes one at a big game, you can almost feel like you're the biggest fan. But who's your biggest fan? It's the person that will get you home safely after a night of drinking. It's the person who looks out for your life to make sure you leave the stadium with someone sober. This could be a designated driver or someone who offers to get you a ride share. Because in Tennessee, fans don't let fans drive drunk. Brought to you by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office, a division of the Tennessee Department of Safety and Homeland Security.
At Great Clips, they know you got a lot going on, just like I have. That's why they save my haircut details and clip notes, so I can get the same haircut as the last time whenever I want. No stress, no worries, no questions asked. And with 60 salons in the Middle Tennessee area, it's easy to find a Great Clips location near you. I've been a client of Great Clips for over 10 years, and if you're looking for a great cut, simply download their online check-in app today. Great Clips. It's going to be great.
Hi, I'm Dwayne Hardy of Forklift Systems. Whether you're a big-time college coach or run a business, to be successful, you need 5-star talent. It's also true for your heavy lifting equipment. Forklift Systems will perform a free productivity, safety, and cost analysis of your fleet. We'll identify your MVPs and what you need to trade or cut. If you're not constantly improving, your competition is. Win championships with your customers. Visit ForkliftSystems.com today.
There are a lot of physical therapists in Tennessee, and you don't want to go to a therapist. You want to choose the therapist that is right for you. This is Charles Davis. I had injuries in my playing days and valued the importance of a quality rehab program. I know and trust these folks, which is why I would choose Star when in Tennessee, and you should too. Their clinicians have world-class advanced training to make them great mechanics of the human body and to get you better fast. Find a Star location near you at starpt.com.
Exploring the offensive lessons from Tennessee's win over Alabama, Coach to Coach rolls on. What is making Dylan Sampson so productive in this run game?
Tennessee's offense run game is all inside or just slightly outside the tackle box where all the big boys are. He had 139 yards, two touchdowns, over 100 of those, by the way, in the second half when they had to have it. And I tell you what, he is an impressive young man. Never runs his mouth, gets up off the ground, hands the ball back. You ever listen to him talk after a ball game or anywhere, he's extremely articulate, and he is one of the very, very best that Tennessee's had. One fumble in 254 carries, and it happened to happen in that ball game. Protects the football, runs hard, gets key yardage, has a nose for the end zone. What does he have, 16 touchdowns now? Big-time player.
Well, and the other thing I like, I mean, I like this back. I just like his demeanor. I like what he does. But the other thing I like about him is he's had some big ball games run. And even after this one, he complements his offensive line and his tight ends too. The blocking part of it, they do a good job of fitting up on these runs. Doug's right. And they run some gap schemes. They run some gap schemes, you know, where they're pulling people. But it's still in between the tackles based. Anything that goes outside, it's off of the running backs are reading it and bouncing outside if they have to. But they've got excellent fits. And when we talk about fits, it's getting your hat in the right position and also with the right leverage as far as the way the defensive front presents itself on both the gap scheme and the outside zone runs. And so the blocking unit, it's not just the offensive line, the blocking unit is doing a really solid job.
Well, this is a two running back. Sometimes you have three. Tennessee, the past couple of years, had three. They got two running backs. Deshaun Bishop has come in there. He's the clear number two. He had five carries in this game. Total, though, for both these two running backs, 31 carries, 175 yards rushing, or two touchdowns, and one turnover. That's a big time day against an opponent like Alabama.
Well, Coach, you and I, we've both said this, and we've said it on a lot of previous programs since this offense has come into being. The overview of this thing is, though, the run game's the foundation of this offense. And it really is. And I know that sounds backwards, but that it is. And it's still the genesis. That is still the running game is still the genesis of dictating to opposing defenses. And you cannot be one-dimensional for this offense to work, especially with the numbers plus splits, with the way that you attack it with the passing game. If your running game is forcing defensive coordinators to bring more people up from the back end, that's the part of this offense that has to make it go.
Nico more involved in running the football in this game. Do you believe that was by design?
That was the difference in this ball game. The running ability of the quarterback. Listen, particularly in the second half, there's no question in the second half he came out, and the way that he ran, he had two big runs, one of them for first and 10, set up the touchdown. And they were decisive. The first half, he was kind of meandering around back there. Do I want to run? Do I not want to run? Identified what he needed to do, exploded for it. That 19-yard scramble set up the first touchdown, and then he had another one in a little bit later where it picked up a key first and 10 or picked up 9 yards of it. That, to me, was the difference. Yes, his passing got better in the second half, but his decisive running, and again, in today's football, your quarterback has to be able, he doesn't have to be a blazer, he doesn't have to be a power runner, but he's got to be able to pick up with his legs key first and tens, because the defenses are going to make you do that now. They're going to take other things away.
Yeah, well, Coach, I like the word you used, decisive, and that was it. He was indecisive early on with his runs. But when he is decisive, and he's a long strider, but he's eating up stripes when he's moving. But when he makes decisions and he's running it, and you're 100% correct, and here's what happens to defenses. If you've got that threat as a runner, it's a numbers game. Then you've got a plus one the thing somehow on defense, because it goes back to all the premise of playing option football, which RPO is. It's option football. It's run, pass, option, but you've got to have somebody at the mesh point, you've got to have somebody for the quarterback, and you've got to have somebody for the perimeter. And the perimeter now in RPOs is the throwing game. So all of that being said, if your quarterback makes the correct reads and is decisive when he goes, he doesn't have to go for 10, 12, 14 yards a carry. But if you're moving the chains with your quarterback, that forces you as a defensive signal caller to account for him.
This is 3 straight weeks SEC games of not scoring a point in the first half. That's six quarters in the first half of the ball game, not scoring a point. Almost all of it. Wasn't all on him, but a lot of it was. Bad judgment on his throws. Deep throws that were open and overthrown him by a large, large margin. That was the problem in the first half. That's why Tennessee had a problem moving the football. But the good part of that is it was corrected in the second half.
Well, the big thing to me is looking at it from a coaching perspective, just from a 30,000-point view. After he got hurt, he came back in and produced. That is a huge growth mentality and structurally for his development and his leadership. Mental and physical toughs, especially at the quarterback position. That rubs off on your teammates, too. That was a big area of growth.
He played almost perfect in the second half, almost. He had two excellent deep throws, one on the run where he laid the ball out to Thornton in that touchdown pass, a beautiful touch pass in the back of the end zone, had several explosive runs, as we mentioned. That is the type of football. When he's playing like that, Tennessee is offensively is going to move the ball and score points. If he can play like that these last five games, or even close to that with this defense, that bodes pretty darn well for Tennessee going forward.
I got four names here for you. McCoy, Thornton, Brazel, Ethan Davis. These four guys are capable of executing the passing game at a high level, both horizontally, which this tunnel screen is a big part of this, and vertically, and in the middle of the field. You've got to hit these throws, but you have got four players right there that can execute everything they want done with this throwing game. You just got to start hitting them. And then Brazel, I mean, I like this player. They need to start getting him the ball more.
Well, he was in the slot. Number one, he's 6'5". Squirrel White is 5'10". He was in the slot down there on that touchdown pass because White was out with an injury. They may have had him in there anyway, but there's no way if that ball would have been thrown just like it was thrown, Squirrel White would not have got to that ball because he is 9 inches shorter. So I think we're going to see going forward, I think we're going to see Brazel in that slot because he has length. He is a combat catcher. He's going to get matched up probably against a star back or a nickel back. That is probably 6 foot or less. I think we're going to see some more of that going forward.
In the kicking game, did you see better production on punt coverage?
No doubt. Two lessons from last week. Mac talked about this. Kick the ball higher. And then the other part of it is keep the edge and don't let the player get outside. Setting the edge, you got. This is what every edge player is taught, and your gunners are the edge players. Keep the ball inside of you. That's where everybody else is. Don't let them get outside of you. That was so much better. 43-yard net, not average, 43-yard net. That's after returns on every punt. That is outstanding at any level of college football.
Well, in the kicking game, they missed the field goal. I'm not concerned about that. Because this field goal kicker is a solid kicker. And I will just say this for this analogy. Everybody misses a putt every now and then. That's just the way I look at it.
You know, Mac, one thing on that, and I thought Coach Heupel did a really smart thing on this. He had missed both of those field goals with 50-yard field goals. There at the end of the ball game, instead of going up and kicking a field goal, he could have gone for it on fourth down and two late in the ball game. I think he put the young man in there probably because he thought it was the right thing to do, but to give him confidence, you know, say, hey, man, we know, you know, we got you. And he kicked it right down the middle. He's a redshirt freshman. He's got a big future at Tennessee.
Get inside the huddle. Pickens, Matthews, and you. Coach to coach. Driven by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office.
One, two, it's coming for you. Three, four, you could win much more. Five, six, on a scratch ticket. Seven, eight, it's not too late. The new haunted Jumbo Bucks instant game. With a top prize of $75,000, it's a terrifyingly great way to celebrate Halloween. Only from the Tennessee Lottery. Game-changing fun. Just remember to play responsibly. 9:10, time to play again.
When the arena lights dim for a concert, or when the crowd becomes one at a big game, you can almost feel like you're the biggest fan. But who's your biggest fan? It's the person that will get you home safely after a night of drinking. It's the person who looks out for your life to make sure you leave the stadium with someone sober. This could be a designated driver, or someone who offers to get you a rideshare. Because in Tennessee, fans don't let fans drive drunk. Brought to you by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office, a division of the Tennessee Department of Safety and Homeland Security.
When it's time for the big game, big fans need big TVs, and at Double Dogs, you can even satisfy big appetites. With choices like Black Angus Burgers, wings tossed in homemade sauces, and dog bowl nachos, well, Double Dogs will make sure you get the fuel you need for lunch, dinner, or even a post-game snack. So whether you have two legs or four, you can cheer on and chow down at Double Dogs. Visit DoubleDogs.biz to view the menu and order online. Double Dogs. Sit. Stay. Eat.
You know, starting to save for your future doesn't have to be difficult. Let Wilson Bank and Trust help tone up your financial goals this year. Our certificates of deposits or CDs can help your money work harder with our competitive rates, earning you more than ever before. WBT checking options allow you to earn rewards you can really use, like a high interest rate or cash back on check card purchases when you meet some e-banking qualifications. Visit your closest Wilson Bank and Trust office or online at wilsonbank.com to get started today. Member FDIC.
Vols off this week, so we've asked our longtime coaches to expand the view, to focus on some of the bigger issues, the problems, the challenges, some of the interesting questions around college football 2024. This is Coach to Coach. With Texas A&M and LSU facing off this weekend, there will be just one SEC unbeaten team left Sunday. Doug Matthews, what does that tell us?
We're going to see, I think, a good number of two-loss teams this year and in the Southeastern Conference, because this league is so tough on the road.
Go right to Vanderbilt. Everybody's got a chance to flip it some form or another. This Southeastern Conference, they are going to spend time before the playoffs really beating up on each other. This league is as competitive as I think as it's ever been, and it's been the top conference for years. But now, the way this setup is, I think top to bottom, it's a completely different game now. I am in complete agreement. You're going to have some losses just because of the grind of the season.
I think it's going to get down to the head coach, and this has to come from the head coach, managing the health of his players going forward. You got to be lucky, without question. You know, you lose a couple of key players, you lose a quarterback, any of these teams, and they're in trouble. But a head coach managing his practice, managing the load that he's getting these players, because you're not going to get much better now. These last five games, you can't get much better tackling in practice. You know, you can keep your conditioning up, but health and having game plans that allow your players to make plays both sides of the ball. But the big part of it is keeping those players as best you can, doing everything you can to keep them healthy.
Theory: the expanded playoff will be the final piece to a changing coaching carousel for this reason. Now a coach who is already in Power Four doesn't have to coach at one of those two or three conference elites. NIL, transfer portal, and now with 12 playoff spots, you can win at Indiana. You can get to the playoffs at Kansas or Missouri. You can do your best coaching and still have a chance at a championship. True or false?
It's true. That is very true. Now, there are still tiers to programs over an extended time, but teams can now, with correct talent evaluation in the transfer portal, teams can now improve quickly. And with the tournament being one and done, if you get in, you have a shot now more than ever before.
What do you believe happened at Florida State?
That is the biggest puzzle. You have a Coach Norvell down there who had a really great record at Memphis, came in the first few years there, boy, it looked like the Bobby Bowden Florida State teams. How they can only have one win is puzzling to me. Certainly the quarterback has not worked out, but they haven't looked good. They don't stop people. They don't run the ball well. They don't kick it particularly well. There's not a single phase of their team that is playing even average right now. They thought some they got, and if you look at who these players were, They got hit pretty hard on graduation, got hit pretty hard on with transfer portal, but they also brought in some transfer portal guys. But that is the biggest head scratcher because, again, this guy is a proven coach.
I think there was a false belief that just previous year's success guaranteed you an automatic result this year, and it is exactly the opposite. There's a lot of things I believe that really avalanched on top of them, but it's very, very shocking to go from where they were to where they are now.
Faking injury to slow down offenses. I know in the past we've talked about this, and there's been some reluctance to deal with it, but it's happening. It's not right. It's not sportsmanlike. And so often, golly, it's just bad acting. I mean, if you're going to pretend to be injured, how about playing it correctly instead of walking to the sidelines and then just walking back on the field and collapsing? What about using replay to punish teams after a game? Warnings, fining coaches, sitting players. Any of that make any sense?
Well, I think they'll start using replays after the ball game without question because there's some of them that's so very apparent. Some of them you see the coach telling him to get down on the ground and then him looking like somebody shot him from the stands. Listen, this is not the player's fault. They are being told by the coaches to do what they're doing. So all of this is on the head coach, period. If he wants to stop it, he can. You can fine him. You can set him. You can do whatever, suspend him for ball games. That's the only way this thing's going to get settled. And listen, some of them, if it's kind of questionable, okay, sometimes they're going to be injured. But the ones, again, we see it as fans watching the ball game or sitting in the stands. We see coaches telling them to get down on the ground. And then, the worst part of this, these trainers go out there and they look like they're working in an IR unit, trying to get somebody, They're out there faking that too. Hey, okay, Mac, get up and let's get your butt off the field here. Everybody knows what we're doing. You're wasting our time. The head coach controls it all. He's the guy making $10 million a year. He's the guy telling every assistant what he wants them to do. And he's the guy that is letting that happen. So if you really want to get it out of the game, all the commissioner's got to do is make 16 calls to every head coach in this league and say, I will be watching and I will set your ass on the bench if this keeps happening.
Yeah, I agree with that wholeheartedly because there's no assistant coach that's telling his side of the ball to do it unless the head coach condones it. And the other thing you cannot do, and I think it's correct, you can't put this on the referees to decide. It's not in the moment. That's not on them. It's on the head coach, and it's on the head coach to say we're not going to do this. I agree wholeheartedly with that. That is where it starts, and that starts from the commissioner to the head coaches in every conference, in every division. That's where it starts.
We're talking about some of the issues around college football as we wrap up October. Michigan at quarterback. How could a school be so unprepared in today's transfer portal age at the quarterback spot? Or, Dave, is it that the portal now makes this more visible to the rest of the world?
Let's talk about this a minute. Before the portal, if you had a backup quarterback that you recruited and were letting, to use Doug Matthews' term, soak, you were able to had an idea of what you had to look forward to and what was coming up. Now, quarterbacks were the very first position that started transferring. That was the very first position. And now what you're forced to do in the transfer portal, you've got to be able to evaluate who will come in. And we've seen some examples of this working really well. And we've seen it right here in this conference, right here. You've seen it at Vanderbilt. It's a great evaluation of somebody that could come in at the moment with 1 year left that could help you. But all of a sudden now, your evaluation, and it's in personnel departments now because that's what you're getting in collegiate football. Now you have to evaluate those people because you don't have quarterbacks that are soaking anymore. Because if they even think they have a sniff of playing somewhere else, they are gone. That's the deal.
A story out about Southern Cal football in an L.A. newspaper. Coaches not visiting two of the powerhouse high school programs in the last year. California, a rich recruiting area, right? Does that surprise you?
Well, if it's true, it's really hard for me to believe that. I don't believe you can be the head football coach or whoever's recruiting coordinator, whoever is, and not have cover that area. Could be true, but I would be a little skeptical of that. But tell you what is clear, in year three, Coach Riley and his staff have not recruited well enough, at a power traditional program. Listen, if you can't recruit at USC, you better go find a job selling, you know, pencils somewhere, because not only do you have the state of California, all right, that's number one. You have a national power. You go anywhere in the country, and you got all of the Polynesian area out there. That Southern Cal has had more great players from that area than anybody. You got nobody to blame but yourself if you can't recruit there.
Fact of the matter is, you look at this team, they are not an elite football team, and you've got a chance to be elite there because it has happened so much in the past, and it doesn't even matter at what decade you're playing in. That is such a rich area to recruit. That is a failure all the way down in talent acquisition.
Play calls. Official calls. Wrong calls. We break it all down. Driven by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office. This is Coach to Coach.
When the arena lights dim for a concert, or when the crowd becomes one at a big game, you can almost feel like you're the biggest fan. But who's your biggest fan? It's the person that will get you home safely after a night of drinking. It's the person who looks out for your life to make sure you leave the stadium with someone sober. This could be a designated driver or someone who offers to get you a rideshare. Because in Tennessee, fans don't let fans drive drunk. Brought to you by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office, a division of the Tennessee Department of Safety and Homeland Security.
Whether you're a big-time college coach or run a business, success demands five-star talent. The same is true for your heavy lifting equipment. Hi, I'm Dwayne Hardy from Forklift Systems. Our team will perform a free productivity, safety, and cost analysis of your fleet. We'll identify your MVPs and let you know which equipment to trade or cut. Remember, if you're not improving, your competition is. Win championships with your customers. Visit ForkliftSystems.com today.
At Great Clips, they know you got a lot going on, just like I have. That's why they save my haircut details and clip notes, so I can get the same haircut as the last time whenever I want. No stress, no worries, no questions asked. And with 60 salons in the Middle Tennessee area, it's easy to find a Great Clips location near you. I've been a client of Great Clips for over 10 years, and if you're looking for a great cut, simply download their online check-in app today. Great Clips, it's going to be great.
Junior.
Yep.
Lady?
Yeah, they have it.
Gigantic.
You know it.
What about mega?
Yep, they've got that one too. When it comes to Jumbo Bucks, winning is the name of the game. In fact, Tennessee lottery players win an average of $2.3 million a day on Jumbo Bucks games alone. So find your jumbo-sized fun today. The Tennessee Lottery, game-changing fun. Please play responsibly.
Jumbo Jumbo?
Oh yeah, they even have that one.
Oklahoma and Ole Miss kick off the SEC lineup Saturday. JoJo Finley takes over the play calling for a Sooners offense that the head coach says needs a spark. Arkansas visits Mississippi State. Bulldogs offense averaging 24 points over the last four games. Arkansas's offense, meanwhile, has gone backward, just about 17 a game. Missouri and Alabama in an elimination game Saturday. Missouri banged up. Their last meeting came in 1928. We're talking about the Doors and Texas. Vanderbilt actually has a winning record all time against Texas. LSU, Texas A&M face off. Doug Matthews, both teams have employed your old theory. Put your head down and just get better as the season goes on.
Well, both of them lost the first game of the year, non-conference, and since then they've run six straight. They're both playing really well right now. Most improved area on both is they're playing well defensively. LSU without question. I mean, it didn't take much for them to play better defensively, and A&M now, of course, new coach there, they're playing better and better. Both these teams are going to be tough to beat going down the this stretch of the Southeastern Conference.
What decides the game? Right to your point. Which defense, or, and I'm going to put special teams in this too, which defense or special teams can be the most disruptive? Turnover and short fields are going to be the key to this game. Field position metrics, the winner of this, of the field position metrics, are going to win this game.
Saturday's nightcap, Kentucky battles Auburn. The Wildcats have dropped two straight. Their run defense was problematic against Florida.
Amazing moments, special players, stories you may not know.
Doug Matthews, Checkerboard Chronicle.
Running through the tee. It's nationally known, highly anticipated, and always gets a great response from the 100-plus Tennessee fans that are there. So, how did this tradition start? When did it start? Let's go back to the mid-1960s. Little-known fact, Coach Ray Mears, who was the basketball coach at that time, when he had his basketball players introduced, started the ball game, they ran through. He had a wooden tee. They ran through the tee, and, of course, to loud applause. Doug Dickey saw that. Early in his tenure there, starting in 1964, he decided, we're going to do the same thing. Well, how are you going to do it? The locker rooms at that time, there was no north end zone. There were no seats in that end zone where the locker room is now, where the team comes out of now. The locker room at that side was on the east side of Neyland Stadium, the way from the press box side. That's where they entered the field from the 50-yard line there. That's where the locker room was. When I first went to Tennessee in 1980, that's where we dressed. There was a problem, though. That was also the team, the opponent's team sideline. So, what did Doug Dickey do? He got with the director of bands and said, hey, let's figure out a way where we can create ourselves an entrance and also maybe have something that's a little bit different. They came up with running through the power tee. Now, at that time, the players came out and went right and left and then ended up on the other side of the field. The opponent's sideline had as much to do, and Ray Mears, with running through the tee as anybody at the University of Tennessee, and what a great tradition it is.
Ball's on a bye this week, two bye weeks in a season, a bit out of the ordinary. Doug, Dave, is this one different in your mind?
Yeah, I think it's less about the break, and now it's more about focus, because now it's more about dialing in for a crucial stretch of SEC games. Focus on the now is paramount in this bye. Now there's no guessing as to your path to the playoffs. You got to drill down on the task at hand each week, and that's what this bye is about.
Well, it doesn't happen very often. You usually get one bye. Rarely do you get two. It happened last year, too. It didn't happen this year. You know, Tennessee, I think, got a great break in the schedule. They had four games, then a bye, then three games, then a bye, and now they're ending up the stretch. So they've had a couple of byes in there to get players healthy. This one in particular, five games, four tough conference games to end the season. Tennessee is in position to put a lot of presents underneath that Christmas tree. Ending this thing up, they're going to be favored in four ball games. Four of the five, they're going to be favored. You still got to win them. Three of them are in Neyland. One of them is in Nashville. The other down in Athens, Georgia. But this is a timely bye for Coach Josh Heupel and this Vol football program.
You have got to be able to focus on the process of what you are doing offensively and discount completely what happened against those first opponents.
Well, the first half offensive woes really comes from one area. It's all in the passing game. One thing that happens in that is, Mac was just talking about the preseason. You know, when you go against teams that don't have those special difference makers out at the defensive end, you know, you don't have to strain like Mac was talking about. And in this league, at that defensive tackle or defensive rush in, most of those guys can put – they're going to be playing pros going forward on this. And that was the same thing that happened in the first half at Alabama. But second half got it corrected. But without question, if they get just plain average in the passing game, running game is excellent.
Coach to coach, driven by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office. In Tennessee, fans don't let fans drive drunk.
Podcast the show now
and catch up before kickoff,
where you find podcasts.
Coach to coach.